God loves music. Let me just make a brief introduction here. There are 600 references to music in the Bible. God loves music. He talks about it all throughout the Bible. The psalmist says we are to sing to him a new song. But what are the new songs today? Now, people leave a church over the music issue above all other issues. Now, some want to stick to hymns. Some want a blend of hymns and contemporary. And again, I'm okay with that. And others want all contemporary, both soft and hard, meaning pretty hard rock. My guests and I are not okay with that. We are going to be talking to, hopefully, if we can get his phone sounding better, Dan Lucarini, who is an author and speaker and seminar leader. One of his books is Why I Left the Contemporary Music Movement. And we're also going to be talking to Kimberly Smith here within seconds. And she feels pretty much the same. She has written a couple of books, Music and Morals, Dispelling the Myth that Music is Amoral. And Let Those Who Have Ears to Hear, written another one too. And so we're going to get into the discussion of what I would call the worship wars. Kimberly, welcome to Understanding the Times.
Thank you.
And we're still trying to get a hold of Dan because when he called in, his line was so bad. Kimberly,
okay.
First of all, I'll give your website and other items just a little bit later so that we can get into the substance here. And I had my thought was to start with Dan. I'm going to start with you. How did you get involved in this? And when I say involved in this, I mean sort of coming against, in your own way, writing books. Music is very important in your life, doing interviews. How did you get involved with such a movement? I know music's very, very important to you.
I grew up learning how to play the piano. I've played the piano for over 40 years now, and I have my college degree included a lot of upper-level music courses. And so after I got saved, which was as an adult, I think I was around 21, at first I really liked contemporary Christian music. I thought it was a new revelation from the Lord. But as I grew in my walk with the Lord and I began to study the issue, I began to understand a little bit more about rhythm, about the rock beat. And then our church started introducing some things in, and I wanted to look at the scriptures and see what it said about music and contemporary Christian music in particular. And I found some verses which I really felt like gave us some directions, which were Ephesians 5:19 and Colossians 3:16, speaking to psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. I felt like the word spiritual, well, it says in the Greek, it's pneumatikos, which means non-carnal. And we can apply that to music. How does it make us move? Do we move in carnal, sensually suggestive movements, or are we remaining circumspect, as with hymns? So that was a jump-off point, and I began writing. I wrote my first book. I think it came out in 97. My second book, Let Those Who Have Ears to Hear, came out in 2001. And then this one, I wanted Music and Morals. I wanted some scientific backup to what I had been saying all those years, and it was really exciting to find that. And then I also talk about in this book how we can classify music as moral or immoral, and I explain how music is not amoral as contemporary Christian proponents claim it is. It's
okay.
Totally wrong.
I want you, in the just a few minutes here, I want you to talk about the scientific evidence for what some of this heavy beat type music does to us, both body and brain. But I want to bring on Dan Lucarini. Dan, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Hi, Dan. It's good having you both on. Welcome to Understanding the Times. Dan, I don't have any of your books. You did email me a number of items, which I do have in front of me. And by the way, do you have a website? Because I couldn't find one.
No, I don't have a website.
All right. That's why I couldn't find it.
No, I published my email address, and people get in touch with me by the thousands through that.
All right. Why don't you give that now, and I'll give it throughout the program.
Sure. It's my first name, last name together, Dan Lucarini. That's L-U-C-A-R-I-N-I at MSN.com.
All right. Now, here's what you write as a dedication to in one of your books. You say this. Not sure which book it is because, again, I don't have your books. But you say this book is dedicated. This is one you've written. This book is dedicated to the authors, pastors, music ministers, and other church leaders who came before me. They never ceased to warn us about the dangers of rock music to a Christian, but we did not take heed. They had the courage to confront others in the church who defended every controversial and sensual music style, but in return we heaped scorn upon them when they dared to oppose the contemporary music invasion into the church service itself. We called them legalists and worse. Many have sacrificed popularity and seen their ministry opportunities limited because their consciences dictated that they must take a stand. To them, we owe an apology and a debt of gratitude. This book is an attempt to pay a small portion of that debt. Dan, that's a strong statement.
Thank you. It means what it says, Jan.
What has been the response to a statement like that?
Well, first of all, that came out of my first book, Why I Left the Contemporary Christian Music Movement. That came out in 2002. The subtitle of that book was Confessions of a Former Worship Leader.
Yes.
And I think the title and the subtitle of the book probably told folks what to expect when they opened the cover of the book, right? But that statement has encouraged so many thousands of Christian leaders, pastors, music ministers, musicians, and people that just go to church and aren't involved in necessarily in leadership ministries, but like to sing praises to the Lord. So I think when I wrote that statement, Janet, that was in 2001, I had no idea, frankly, of the size of the people who I now call conscientious objectors to this invasion of rock and pop music styles taken directly from the culture and just brought in wholesale into churches during their services. And there are so many people suffering, many cases silently because of that. So the Lord has taken that statement and just used it, I think, to encourage so many people.
Kimberly, when we talked the other day, and also it's in one of your books, by the way, Kimberly does have a website, and that is musicandmorals.com, musicandmorals.com. All her books are there. But you told me that you have not been received very well, at least on some talk radio programs. You've been put down and called all sorts of things because you've taken this position that contemporary Christian music is just not healthy.
Right.
What have people said to you?
One lady told me that I wasn't saved, and I've had the worst case scenario was a show host that was so antagonistic, and these are Christian people, these are Christian radio shows. When we would go on break, he would argue with me, and I finally just asked him, I said, will there be mosh pits around the throne of heaven?
We need to explain what a mosh pit is.
Okay. It's where the kids all get down in front of the band, and they dance wildly, and they slam together, and they dive off the stage, or they dive, you know, off of something into the crowd. It's just a sea of humanity just writhing, basically. And I said, are there going to be mosh pits around heaven? And he didn't respond, but he played really loud rock music in my ear. It was just rude. It was so rude. The whole show was like this, that in the next few days I got I think it was a call or a letter, I cannot remember now, it's been a few years, from the station apologizing because people had called in. But this is the kind of emotional evidence we get, the emotional feelings. It's such a hot topic because people are emotionally tied to their contemporary Christian music. So it is a major issue. But it's so comforting to know that there are people out there that feel, as Dan and I, and you do, that we need to take a stand and we need to encourage each other and reclaim music for the Lord in a way that is moral and upright.
And I think you said to me on air, excuse me, on the telephone the other day that you too don't necessarily expect churches to go back to strictly hymns and nothing else. And,
no.
And that some of the more soft contemporary music is sort of okay with you too.
It's unrealistic to say that we're ever going to get back to hymns unless, you know, we have really strong leadership and people are willing to make that stand. However, you know, God inspires people all through the ages now as well as when they were writing the traditional hymns. So why can't we have God-honoring, biblically sound, doctrinally sound hymns in our contemporary type of music, but make it soft, make it gentle, make it moral, and leave out the drums. Orchestrations, you know, orchestra is fine if you want to have an orchestra, but let's keep it on the high road instead of going towards the rock.
Okay, Dan, I wanted to ask you, when did this gospel rock movement come to center stage in the church? I think it was used for outdoor festivals in the 70s and 80s. Would it have been the 1990s that it moved into the sanctuaries?
In my latest book, which I co-authored with John Blanchard, the title is Can We Rock the Gospel? We trace the history of rock music and its effect on the church. And what we found out was back in the late 60s, seems to be the time when some Christian leaders started to use rock music for youth festivals. And towards the end of the 60s, early 70s, there were some churches in Southern California, for example, that I think were part of what became known as the Jesus Movement.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they were using folk rock music in their services. The best known, I think, is Calvary Chapel. Chuck Smith founded it, and Maranatha music came out of that experience back in the early 70s. Now, as far as we can tell from our research, in the 70s, there were a small handful of churches that were performing a style of rock music in their worship services. In the 80s, we started to see more of that happen as CCM artists became very popular, and people that went to churches that would never think of rocking out on Sunday mornings were starting to listen to this in their private time. And then in the 90s, I wrote about this in both of my books, about the explosion of rock music as part of the worship experience. And this came in the heels of a couple church movements. One was the Willow Creek, which started in the 80s and really exploded in some places in the 90s. Then, of course, Purpose Driven Church, which Rick Warren's first book came out in 1995, I believe. And that started just an explosion of new churches and churches changing the way they were doing worship. And as we pointed out in Can We Rock the Gospel, which was published just this past year, everything's flipped around now, Jan. It's very difficult in some large cities or even small towns these days to find an evangelical church that does not have a rock band leading the worship service. And so that's how far things have come in a space of about, less than 40 years.
Well, not going to pin it all on Rick Warren, but here I do have a quote of his here, which, and I do hear what you're saying, that there's great influence here. He says back in July 29th, 2002, at Saddleback Church, we are unapologetically contemporary. And right after we made that decision and stopped trying to place everybody, excuse me, I think he means please everybody, Saddleback exploded with growth. We are loud. We are really, really loud. We're not going to turn it down. baby boomers want to feel the music, not just hear it. That's Warren's comment back in July of 2002. And so I think you're right, Dan, that he has had some influence. But, you know, a mega church, I mean, if a mega church becomes a mega church based on solid Bible teaching, I say praise the Lord. If they become a mega church with other types of gimmicks, that's when we get into trouble. And I think one of those gimmicks can be what we're talking about today.
I think my subtitle for my second book is, If They Took the Music Away, Would You Still Follow Jesus? And I think that would be really telling why are they there. Is it for the sound doctrine of the word of the Lord, or is it for the music?
Now, Kimberly, I'm quoting you here, okay?
Sure.
Entertainment and self-glory have replaced reverence and fear of the Lord in our worship services. Many aren't going to have ears to hear that.
Yeah.
They enjoy particularly the entertainment. It's a part of their very heart and soul.
Well, we are in an entertainment-driven society, and so, of course, it has bled over into our churches. And we all, we see that now in all of life, really, entertainment. We're so entertainment-driven, and it's really a shame that we can't escape that and to the sanctuary of our church and really honor the Lord.
Let me ask you both this question. It's kind of a bottom line issue here. Dan, what should people do when it is clear that gospel rock has taken over a music program? Do they walk out? I mean, that's what I hear many are doing. And some church leaders say, well, just plan. We're going to plan on losing a lot of people. Get used to it. Other people I hear arrive late just for the sermon. What should people do if, in fact, they have planted themselves in a church for 10, 20, 30 years, and all of a sudden everything's different?
Well, first of all, I think it's an incredible scandal, and I've done my part to expose that, that any shepherd would come up with a program that would purposely drive out some of the sheep. And I think we need to continue to talk about that, and we need to put the pressure on leaders who do these things. And then in terms of, I wrote a chapter in one of my books called Stay or Leave. It's a very difficult subject. First of all, I do not recommend and I do not urge anybody to leave. I think one of the problems we have is when this happens in a church, there are some Christians that just feel unable to stand against it. Or if they bring up a simple complaint, they're branded as some of the most unkind things. And let's face it, in America, we tend to get hurt very easily, and we leave. We go to another church, right? And so as a result, nothing is resolved. Now, we know of people that have stuck it out and worked through and continue to go to the leaders. Some of these people are deacons. Some are assistant pastors, music ministers, choir directors, you name it, and have just been very solid about presenting sound and reasonable biblical arguments for their convictions, and we have seen some changes. And so we don't tell people to flee.
All right.
That's not my ministry. I know that there's cases, though, because I've received letters from so many people now, where they've tried that, and they just weren't able to get anywhere, and by conscience, they could no longer worship in that way, and so they were forced to separate from that church. It's very sad, and it hurts very much to do that.
It hurts. We had to do that. That's when I began studying this issue, and we brought it to the leadership, and we had several meetings, my husband and the leadership, and I knew there were other people in the church that were really concerned as well. And we'd sit there, and then there would be a sermon about what we had talked about. You know, and we knew it was directed toward us. And then there came a point when the music minister actually told us to our faces, well, if you don't like it, you're going to have to leave. And that was like, well, okay, you know, we knew it wasn't going to change. And it was it was really, really sad. And because we had been there, my husband got baptized there, and two of my children, and it was like a divorce. It was very emotionally wrenching to have to find another church, but we could tell that it was had become a real issue, and they weren't going to change.
Yeah, they're not going to change. Again, we're talking this hour with Kimberly Smith, who is a musician herself, has written a number of books, Music and Morals, Dispelling the Myth that Music is Amoral, another Let Those Who Have Ears to Hear, If They Took the Music Away, Would You Still Follow Jesus? Dan Lucarini, who's written a number of books, including Why I Left the Contemporary Music Movement. Kimberly and Dan, here's where this all affects me. This is a little sidestep, if you don't mind. But I have been not allowed on certain very fine Christian stations and networks because they do not want substance as much as they want to give the listening audience what the listening audience apparently wants to hear. And what they apparently want to hear, and folks, you don't have to worry, we're going to turn the volume down. What folks really want to hear, instead of Understanding the Times, instead of Southwest Radio Church, instead of John MacArthur, they want to hear this. Okay, basically, let's throw this party in gear. Real substance to something like that. Any comment?
Oh, this is Dan. I thought I got cut in by a rock music station suddenly.
Mm-hmm. You couldn't tell the difference.
Right.
I could tell the difference because I study this subject.
Right.
And two things happened right away. First of all, if I want to listen to rock music, and by the way, I don't any longer.
Yes.
I've got very strong convictions about it. But if I want to listen to rock music, then I'd be better off turning into a secular radio station where at least they're good at doing bad music. Christians doing it is one of the strangest things because as Kimberly has very well pointed out in her books, you've got people that call themselves the children of God, the saints of God, that are trying to imitate a music system that is totally opposed to everything that God stands for. And so there's just a lack of authenticity in that music to me when I hear that. The second thing is I know that those sounds that you just played, that appeals to a younger generation, and that's going to immediately offend many people who are over a certain age.
Right.
And so that presents a tremendous problem as well.
Okay, again, if you want to get a hold of Dan Lucarini, it's Dan, Lucarini, at MSN.com. And Dan, Lucarini, at MSN.com. Okay, Dan, let me read a couple emails you have gotten. And you know what? I think I'll do that. When I come back from a break. But you say in some of your writings, Dan Lucarini, that the evidence points in a very different direction. Rock music is a stumbling block and a scandal to many Christians today and is dividing the church. Over the past 3 years, the authors, one of them being Dan, have received literally thousands of emails, letters, and phone calls from discouraged and offended believers. Now, I want to read, just when we get back, I want to read a few of these emails that Dan has gotten. Here, I'll just read this one right now. The loudness of the music is unjustified. There is an old saying that when a pastor has nothing to say, he needs to yell louder and pound the pulpit. The noise alienates certain people. Their ears cannot tolerate the sound. I know many people, including my own parents, godly people, who have stopped going to church for the simple reason that the loudness of the music is intolerable to the ears, and the message to them is this: young people matter, and you don't. I think that's very, very insightful. Another one says, at chapel, the worship was awful. It was like pure noise. The drums were so loud that I couldn't hear the praise team sing, and the bass was really loud, too. It was like going to a rock concert, and the songs they picked were not worshipful, to say the least. They troubled my spirit. This one says, I was shocked to walk into the sanctuary of my Christian Reformed church one Sunday morning and find the communion table shoved off to the back corner of the platform and replaced by a drum set directly under the cross and a microphone front and center, all illuminated by colored stage lights. The problem I saw, it was not the arrangement of the furniture per se, but rather what this communicated intentionally or not about whom and what the church valued and focused on in worship. In other words, who was our God? I feel somewhat like Martin Luther. Here I stand, I can do no other, so help me, God. And I do not want to leave the church, but I doubt that I can, in good conscience, continue to worship there long term if changes are not made. I think that that says a lot, that it's not just the guitar, but it seems to be the whole mood gets changed when this happens.
Yeah, that's just one example. In Can We Rock the Gospel, where you read that quote from, I think we reprinted about 20 letters like that.
Right.
Touching upon different things, and they all have a similar theme, how offensive it is to, in this case here, I think that's a stark reminder of the symbolism. Let's just for a moment here, let's leave out the discussion about immorality of a music style.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about the symbolism. This was a church that had... one Sunday had a pulpit and a table representing the Lord's table in front of it. And then the next Sunday had basically a rock combo with bright lights, and it was turned into a stage. And what is this saying about us? Is this saying that we want to worship God in reverence and awe, as Hebrews 12:28 would suggest that we still need to do? Or is it saying we want to worship God in a way that makes us feel really good about ourselves and brings attention to the performers? And I think it's clear what this lady concluded. I actually got to meet that lady.
Yes.
I've received over 2,000 emails now from my first book, and now the second book. I didn't put my email address in there, but I guess everybody has it now. It's on the Internet, so we're getting letters there as well. And so this is not an isolated incident. Some of our critics, I know Kimberly has the same problem, some of our critics accuse us of taking just a little bit of anecdotal information and coming up with these crazy ideas. Well, I can tell you for a fact that I have so much evidence, and I challenge any of my critics to come up with their evidence and show me their evidence in such numbers, and I think that you'll find out that they're more anecdotal than we are.
Again, you can reach Dan only by email, danlucarini at msn.com. That's L-U-C-A-R-I-N-I, danlucarini at msn.com, and you can reach Kimberly Smith at musicandmorals.com. I'd like to play a short clip, if you don't mind, by John MacArthur. as to what he thinks about this issue?
What is the role of our emotions in a worship service? Well, we are to worship in spirit and in truth, Jesus said, and spirit has to do with emotion. The role of the emotion is to respond to the truth. Worship should not be sort of a, I guess you could say, an inducing of an emotional response. It's not just the warm and fuzzies. It's not playing, you know, lilting melodies with a sort of a melancholy rhythms, soft kind of emotional rhythms that sort of sweep us away emotionally in kind of a feeling expression that we call worship. That's not worship. Worship is when I, with my mind, contemplate the truths about God and about Christ and about salvation. And it is in the understanding and contemplation of those truths that my emotions are moved to joy, to exhilaration, to sing, to say thanks, to be overwhelmed, to weep. If all you're doing is having your emotions sort of manipulated by the music, then you've missed it. Your emotions need to respond to the mind grasping the wonders of our God and of Christ and the glories of salvation. Then we should have music that appeals to the mind, first of all. Messages that appeal to the mind, first of all. So that whatever is our emotional response, we are responding not to some physical seduction, not to some physical manipulation, but to divine truth that has gripped our minds.
All right. I hope you, hope you're able to hear that those comments by John MacArthur. Dan, let me ask you this. You with me?
Yes, I heard that.
Yeah, Dan, let me ask you this. Dan Lucarini. We're kind of in a new day in the church. We have all sorts of terms that are now familiar as it concerns the 21st century church, from seeker sensitive, and they want to reach the lost in non-traditional ways. We've got the new emergent church movement that heavily utilizes gospel rock. I think of the Apostle Paul, who became all things to all people, which would be an excuse that some would use for it's okay to try to reach the lost or the younger person or whatever with the gospel, no matter how you do it. I often wonder how the Apostle Paul and Jesus ministered without sound equipment, but anyway, that's another program. But what are your thoughts, though? I mean, we are in a new generation of church. How we do church, it's different today, Dan.
Yes, it is, but it's something that we changed.
Right.
You know, God didn't send a new revelation, at least I don't think he did. But there are some who argue that rock music in the church is a new movement of the Spirit. It's a fresh wind, which is one of the sort of catchphrases that's used by the contemporary worship movement. And so there's a fresh wind of the Spirit blowing through the church. And one well-known artist even said that this is God doing a new thing. So there are people who actually claim that God is doing a new thing through rock music to reach people.
That's right.
This was made up by men because there's no revelation that I'm aware of from the truth of Scripture that, for example, let's use Paul. When Paul said, I will be all things to all people, well, we've taken that out of context so badly and said, okay, Paul, who also wrote about holy living in several letters and warned people to stay away from idolatry, the same Paul is then going to drop all of his own teachings about holiness, and he's going to go do anything to save people? So Paul's going to go out and, you know, dance with the pagan girls to save? That is so ridiculous, but yet that's how people use that argument today.
Yeah, I know they do. Mm-hmm. Well, all right. Kimberly, let me ask you this. I think that you both feel that gospel rock, we'll use that term just for lack of a better term, does not help purify the soul, and it does encourage spiritual thoughts. It doesn't help spiritual thoughts, and it may not be good for moral behavior. But, Kimberly, do you feel that the music that we're talking about today could actually encourage one towards immoral behavior? And you sort of addressed this a few minutes ago, but I still want to go back there and get a more specific answer. Do you feel that the music will encourage immoral behavior?
Yes.
You do?
In a word, yes. We want to live in a world, we want to experience music nowadays. John MacArthur's comment was so wonderful, because what he's really saying is we've turned it around. It's upside down in our churches now. We're relying on the music to give us our emotional state and make us feel like we've worshiped, but it needs to be the Word of God, and coming out of our heart is what we need to have. The conviction, which leads to emotion of how undone we are. But when we use the rock music, we are responding to the beat, pure and simple. And if you just watch people and how they move to that beat, you can see sensually suggestive movements. Now, in my opinion, I don't think that that is a righteous act, a way to be pure and holy and live out fruits of the spirit of self-control. In fact, what rock music is doing is causing people to lose their inhibitions and have lack of self-control and act wildly and with lewd and suggestive behaviors. And this doesn't mean only secular rock. You see the exact same thing at Christian rock concerts and now in the churches. So if that's a holy way of living, acting out lewd and suggestive behavior, then it's not. If that someone thinks it is, it's not. It's definitely so. I think yes, this kind of music is leading people to do things that would not necessarily or never be correct as far as holy and pure living. We wouldn't think of those kinds of movements. And some of the dear saints and martyrs that have gone before us, such as Corrie Ten Boom, we'd never see her acting that way. And yet she did so much for the cause of the Lord. And it was a pure and simple living, a holy living. I think the longer we live as Christians, the more holy and sanctified and set apart we should be. And I'm not saying be legalistic at all, but there's some things we just shouldn't be doing. And if you go out on the street, people don't normally act that way. They don't sway their hips. They don't shimmy their shoulders. They don't act out sexually suggestive movements. But you add music, and it goes straight to their soul. And they bypasses the thinking, and they just start doing that. And it's definitely not a holy response. But contrast that to Handel's Messiah, how people respond to that, the traditionally played way. Contrast that to how people behave when traditional hymns are played. And circumspect music creates circumspect behavior. And that's how we can tell if the music is appealing to the flesh or to our spirits and intellects.